Rock Central Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. If you are angry about the delayed start of Canuck Central today, direct your anger towards one Bick Nizar, who apparently has forgotten all sense of time as far as his show goes with the People's Show, because we are starting 6 minutes late today.
He just thought the people wanted more.
I'd like to apologize on behalf of the People's Show.
Oh, somebody's going to take accountability around here?
Yeah, Bick doesn't, so I will.
All right. Thank you, Dom.
We're not just going to lay the blame at somebody else's foot, at somebody else's feet? No?
No. I mean, you know what? We could just blame Pettersson and Miller.
I mean, they're being blamed for everything else right now. Did something happen today with them?
I mean, I know the Canucks won a hockey game last night.
I was just fired up to talk about how good Tyler Myers was last night. The Tyler Myers return game.
He was so good last night.
Could you believe that? I was like, who is this guy? It's like 2009 Calder-winning trophy Tyler Myers.
Unbelievable performance.
Turn back the clock.
He was outstanding. I wish we could see more of that Tyler Myers, right? Like that's the good end of the chaos. Yeah. Like when it peaks, that's like peak. Yeah. Tyler Myers playing great.
And was Myers that good, or had we just grown tired of watching Vincent Desharnais?
No, he was that good.
Yeah,
I want to give him credit. Okay. I mean, that play made behind the net. We've been all been talking about it, right? Like he looked like 6'7" Quinn Hughes.
I truly do want to believe he meant to pass that puck to Pugh Suter.
Do I. Because that's like the ultimate perfectly weighted, no look backhand sauce to Pugh Suter, who on the
breaks
PK
up a power play zone entry and with an unbelievable through pass for Pugh Suter.
Yeah, I mean it's honestly one of the most unreal plays. Obviously, I don't think he really meant to do it, but I want to live in a world where he meant to do that.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to talk about. I wanted to joke around today and be like, you know what? Like, Canucks won two in a row. The overwhelming reaction to our text inbox last night was, you know what? This team has sucked, and I was out on him.
Mm-hmm.
Winning's kind of fun.
Winning is fun.
Who knows? Maybe. It's like kombucha girl meme. You're like, no, I mean, maybe. Actually, maybe they're turning it around.
They felt like the Canucks again, right? They were scoring power play goals. They were playing well defensively. Maybe got a little help from the goalie interference non-call. But it all worked out in their favor last night.
Yeah, Petey played well. JT played well. Hughes was sensational. I mean, Myers, player of the game. And then they were good defensively. They scored on the PK, on the power play, on the PK. Like, it was like a lights out performance.
Yes. It was as good as it gets.
Yeah. And then I woke up at like 8:15 today, look at my phone.
Oh, so we don't get to talk about the Tyler Myers return game.
You know what? I'm glad we did. You know, like I wasn't going to succumb to this. Like, I wanted to get that take off, at least a truncated version of it.
Well, now we have to deal with the fire.
Yeah.
In Vancouver, partially caused by the president of hockey ops, Jim Rutherford. It's the open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the open.
Four! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
The open on Canuck Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks, an hour take on it, and the latest, which everybody who is a Canucks fan or a casual Canucks fan, a hockey fan across the NHL has been talking about, is Jim Rutherford's comments to Gary Mason in the Globe and Mail, a piece titled "No Good Solution in Rift Between Canucks Teammates Elias Pettersson and JT Miller," Rutherford says. And there's a lot. There's a bunch of money quotes. I mean, we've been on the end of one of these interviews when Jim Rutherford needed to get a message out.
Yeah.
And he was, didn't matter what you were going to ask him, he was getting his message out. And that's kind of what happened here with Gary Mason.
Yeah. And you know, I've been thinking all day about like what is the upside of this?
Yes.
Like, what is he trying to accomplish with this?
Still wondering. At least I am.
But I think maybe it's as simple as what you said, just message sending. He just felt he had to send a message. He just felt he had to be honest, quote unquote, about the situation. One thing that was clearly lacking was any accountability. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of, you know, admitting what the problem was, mm-hmm. shining light on the issue and the extent of the issue, right?
Yeah.
And how the solutions are very bad, really. Mm-hmm. Like, there are no solutions. And the ones that we have in front of us are just like, yeah, it's pretty grim, right? So he did not paint a rosy picture around it. But there's no accountability about how they found themselves here from their standpoint.
Yeah.
The decisions to bring the players back and signing them, knowing the situation. And also the construction of the team to some degree as well that have led to compounding those issues, right? So there was a lot of illuminating the problem, but no accountability. So that was missing as well, I thought, from Jim when speaking to Gary Mason today. And that's the one thing I would have liked to see. I think if you're going to do this, like, take it on as well a little bit, wear it as well, especially when you're creating a pretty big storm around yeah. this, and especially when the team is coming off two victories. And to be fair, I don't think he had the interview done after the win last night. These yeah. things don't work that way, right? But it also shows that little fate he had that after the win against the Capitals that they would go on to win in St. Louis, right? And maybe turn it around. It's at a situation when he spoke to Gary where he felt, you know, pretty hopeless about yeah. where this team finds itself.
Well, to a certain extent, a lot of the quotes. Now, there was one Gary Mason added later today on Twitter, more in full, that is referenced in the piece that we'll get to. But, you know, when I first read it, essentially, Jim Rutherford said wins don't really matter. Like, we're kind of, not that they don't matter, but we need to see a lot in order for us to buy back in on this group, because a short win streak isn't going to cut it. A brief period of success isn't going to cut it. And this quote, and I felt like for a long time that there was a solution here because everybody has worked on it, including the parties involved, but it only gets resolved for a short period of time and then it festers again. And it certainly appears like there's not a good solution that would keep this group together. So to me, that sounds as if you'd need to see a lot, maybe like a good 50 game stretch like we saw through the first half of last year, to really buy in on the idea that this core group can get this thing back on the rails from where it's been this year.
There's a huge lack of faith, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was very clear in everything that he said. At the same time, he left the door open to them staying and left the door open yeah. to their minds being changed. And he did say that the preference is to keep both players. Now, how much of that is lip service? How much of that is truly honest? Because we know they did come close to moving JT and at the very least engage pretty extensively in moving Pedersen to Carolina, even if yeah. it never came that close. But I think the point is pretty clear what was mm-hmm. going on there. There was a willingness from Vancouver. So as much as he said the preference is to keep both players, they've more than explored the trade market for both players, right? So I'm not sure how much of that is like, this is still the number one preference.
Yeah.
Clearly their preference is for things to change. But is he doing this and saying all these things and painting a really grim picture about the trade return, saying you're not even getting a first or second line center? I mean, may not even be, you know, a second line center. It might be a third line center or a fourth line center, really. That's kind of what you might be looking at. And maybe we have to get assets and go and flip them. We talked about this, how given what's out there,
yeah.
their best course of action, if they're trading guys, is get assets and try to flip them. But that's not easy to do. Easier said than done. Do you think he's saying all these things if they were on the verge of trading him, though? Trading either one of these players? Like, is he truly trying to prepare the market for a very underwhelming trade that's going to happen within hours or days?
He's clearly underwhelmed with any of the offers that they've gotten outside of the ones that were almost completed.
Yeah.
So now you're kind of staring at a situation where there's not a lot of urgency in this very moment around the league to make any kind of a move, to make that big splash. You're still a ways away, over a month away from the trade deadline, so you don't have that natural deadline that's coming closer. A lot of playoff teams are comfortable in their playoff position, still trying to accrue cap space, still trying to see what's out there and available. So there is, right now, you're kind of in a void now that the Rantanen move has been made. The Rangers' interest in Miller has cooled off after that deal fell through. So you're kind of in a void of, well, we aren't seeing anything immediate that's going to change the current situation. At least nothing is apparent in this very moment that could change for right now.
No, and the Carolina Hurricanes, had urgency because they wanted to close a Rantanen deal. He was available, and they started to accelerate all their interest in their top players, including Pettersson and Miller, to see kind of what the best deal out there was for them. That's because there was urgency to get the deal done with Rantanen.
Because Colorado had urgency to move on the player.
Yes.
They were worried about injury or whatever else. They decided they were going to move Mikko Rantanen, so they wanted to get a deal done quickly.
Rangers had urgency for very obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, the deal died, it seems like, in the last moments for him to go there. And now the Rangers have won. Their situation is different. And if that issue with the retention, if that's like a bigger issue than Drury, let's say, because we don't know why the reason.
Yeah.
Like, did they ask for retention because Drury's messing with the Canucks?
Mm-hmm.
Did he not like the contract? Did ownership not give the okay to the contract? Because you know, when you're adding big money, that has to be okayed. And if it's something like that, for instance, and how do you resuscitate that type of trade? You know what I mean? So who knows, right? Like I'm not, maybe they do, but it's not very simple. Like something significant is going to have to change, I think, based on everything that's happened, for them to get back at the table earnestly with the Rangers to make a deal. So to me, this all kind of reminds me of where the Dallas Stars found themselves some years ago when Ben was struggling, Sagan was struggling, their attitude was questioned, their leadership was questioned, and Jim Leitz, who was a Dallas Stars CEO, put them both on blast. Mm-hmm. Okay, just completely ripped into Jamie Benn and Tyler Sagan. And the reason I think they did that was because there was dissatisfaction and they couldn't do anything about it. The players had big contracts, had no movement clauses, had poor value. So all you could do was put them on blast and hope that this ripping off the Band-Aid, so to speak, publicly mm-hmm. was going to be the last ditch effort to see if things could change. That's what this kind of reminds me of.
Yeah.
And maybe they get to a point, Reach, where he pulls the trigger and they pull the trigger and they bring back a really underwhelming package. But based on what we heard, it seems like this is still an effort to see if they can change the situation because the options, they're not very positive.
They're not. And Jim Rutherford illuminates to that. And just to refresh people's minds on what Dallas Star CEO Jim Leitz said to The Athletic at the time about Jamie Benn and Tyler Sagan. This was way back in 2018 now, so obviously Sagan and Benn figured it out somewhere along the way. The Dallas Stars went to a Stanley Cup final. They've been a pretty good team through all of these years, and Sagan and Benn got their bleep together and started playing a lot better than they were back in 2018. When talking about owner Tom Gilardi, he said, he's pissed, and you know what it's about. They are bleeping bleep. I don't know how else to put it. I can't obviously say those words on the radio. The team was okay, but Tyler Sagan and Jamie Benn were terrible. I don't get it. The good news is the coach got everyone else to go, and we found a way, and we were able to make up for their lack of playing. So, yeah. I mean, it's a team official going out and absolutely tearing a new one into two pieces of the core. And Jim Rutherford obviously doesn't use expletives to tell you how he's feeling about JT Miller and Elias Pettersson and their spat that has, in his eyes, been the main culprit in the Canucks' shortcomings this season. But it's pretty obvious where he thinks the blame should go, how he feels about these two players, that they haven't been able to coexist to a point that they can make it work together. And so how else are you supposed to look at this other than he's either done and completely out, or, as you say, this is his last ditch attempt to get these guys to realize, if you want to have success here in Vancouver, we've got to figure this out right now.
Yeah, and because this also doesn't help your leverage.
Yeah.
You know, when you go out there and make it clear what the problem is and how much work you put into it.
I think the league kind of knows, though.
No, I get it, but it doesn't help your situation.
Like, if you think about the spider web that flies through the National Hockey League, like how quickly word can get around. Mm. You know, Jake DeBrusk used to play for Boston. He's probably still got buds on that team. Maybe he's...
Well, yeah, of course.
You know, I'm not meaning to put it on a singular player, but you know, guys talk to their old friends and who knows what gets said.
But Reach, he's saying we might have to accept like a third line center.
Yeah.
That doesn't help your leverage. You know what I mean? Like, why would you say that if you're trying to move? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It doesn't help you, is my point. Like, I don't think it does. Like, sure, like, everybody knows they're desperate.
Guess he feels Filipino's a third line center.
Yeah, I suppose, right? Like, you know?
Pretty much.
And that's what you're saying that you're going to have to accept. Like, there's a resignation that we're not going to get what we want. That doesn't help your leverage.
The bigger quote that Gary Mason was unable to put into his full article, as he said, on Twitter later in the day because of space. I couldn't include the full quote, but I think it's important to pass along. I asked him what happens if the team goes on a streak and starts winning regularly. He said, "We evaluate things on a regular basis, so we'll see. When you win, everybody feels better. Does that make the players feel better? Does that make these two individuals feel better? ? All those factors play into the decision. We don't want to trade these players, but we may very well be forced to."
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, again, like, that's not a very strong endorsement. It leaves a door open. He didn't corner himself and give you any declaratives.
Yeah.
But again, like, when you were so far engaged in trade talks with both guys, like, it's going to take more than a few wins.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see if they're up to the task or not.
What's changed? Like, literally nothing has changed in this situation other than Jim Rutherford pouring kerosene onto the fire here.
Yeah. I mean, as far as, like, so developments have had, developments we all knew, Pedersen and JT don't get along. It's become an issue and people are tired of dealing with it, right?
It's a years long issue.
And, but this has, like, since the first road trip of the year, right? Like,
yeah.
It kind of started, it was like late October. The JT Pedersen thing has been talked about to death, right? And eventually it was acknowledged by the team. It was not denied. This was like the biggest admission of it. The only other
JT and Pedersen both vehemently denied it, though.
And the only, exactly, right? And the only other two developments were, like, real developments were the Rangers coming close with JT and the Canes at least advancing on JT and Pedersen. Like, that's actually gone far. I think that's pretty instructive. Like, when you've gone that far in trying to trade both guys, and like I've been saying, like, for over a week now, if one guy goes, doesn't mean the other won't go.
Yeah.
You know, if one guy goes before the deadline, the other can still go before the draft, you know? And if one guy doesn't go, and there's a real chance neither guy gets traded by the deadline.
Yeah.
Right? But that could also, like, it doesn't close the door. You know how Elliot got a lot of, you know, crap for saying this might happen, that might happen? It's, like, literally the case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we could see both get traded at the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that could happen. That's a level of dissatisfaction. You don't say the things you say unless you truly are willing to walk away either, right? But does it align for you right now? And right now, given the Canucks situation, they're in a real poor spot trying to make a trade around any one of those two players.
I mean, there's the times, like, you're reading through some of these quotes and it's like, it feels like Rutherford almost feels as if they have to trade both of these players.
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, if you feel like this is an issue.
Yeah.
And you've lost faith in both players, and you probably feel like you have to move on from them, right? The other thing I thought was interesting was there was no mention or criticism or any shade towards Tockett.
No.
At all, right? No. Like, it's very clear, and I've been kind of saying this for a while, that don't expect Tockett to get fired at all. Like, he's not viewed as the issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
There could be criticisms and things we can critique, but they don't feel like he's the problem. And him coming out and saying all this was a real tacit defense of the head coach, too, saying, all our problems on the ice come down to these two players.
He also says and talks about Quinn Hughes and this whole thing. And it's like you're now at a point where you're retooling the retool, essentially, if you really go down the path of trading these players. A retool that you began when you first got here in the wake of the Jim Benning era. Took you some time to move out some of the contracts, and you had to live through the rest of the Boudreaux contract because that wasn't something you initially had signed on for. And when I say you, I mean Jim Rutherford. So you get through that. It feels good. It feels great. It looks great last year. And now you're at a point where it's like, okay, we're retooling the retool. And we have to do it. If we do end up trading these players, we have to do it at such an expedited pace that in a year's time, we're in a spot that we can sell a future on our captain, Quinn Hughes, who's also mentioned in the piece.
Your degree of difficulty just went up exponentially.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you can't pull it off, but it's you know, we like it.
It feels like one of those Adidas ads, like impossible is nothing.
Yeah.
Like, well, this is pretty close. If you trade both of them, this is pretty close.
It's really difficult. I mean, nothing is impossible, right?
Yes.
But, man, it's a huge task.
I mean, you don't want to put a probability on it, because the probability is small that you can trade both of these players and still be in a good spot this time next year.
And you know, there was some, you know, yesterday we were talking about how if they trade Pettersson or JT, or they trade Pettersson and get that trade wrong, like that trade, the future of Quinn Hughes and the window that this team is going to compete hinges on what you do with these trades.
Yeah.
And Rutherford himself said, like, I mean,
if we were going to completely start over, that means he goes, talking about Quinn Hughes, and we'd like to figure out a way that he's here forever. So that's telling you a lot of how they need to make this work in 12 months. We'll get to the Canucks Central Roundup a little bit later on. Also going to do overrated, underrated, since we have a truncated show ahead of the game against the Nashville Predators tomorrow night. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drans. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.